Hello, rap fans. It's Richard Herring here. Thank you for listening to my podcasts, powered by Acast Plus. Do tell your friends if you think they might enjoy them too. And do come and see me on tour in my show, Can I Have My Ball Back? Go to richardherring.com/ballback/tour for all tour dates, going to lots of places in the UK. Some extra gigs added in London at the Leicester Square Theatre and the Bloomsbury Theatre. The Leicester Square Theatre first gig is very nearly sold out, so do rush along to those shows, London, if you want to come along. Some of the shows selling fantastically well, some of them selling pretty badly. Hello, Swindon. Do you know I'm coming to your town? Please buy some tickets. And I do have to give a trigger warning. I've done the show only a few times and 6 men have passed out. After the bit where I explain what happens to you during an operation for testicular cancer. So, are you man enough to handle my balls? Only come if you are, have lots of balls and are not scared of balls. There is some mild testicle trauma involved in this story of testicular cancer. It's mainly funny, though, and if you don't come, that means you're scared to come, and I'm going to judge you, so... It's like going on a fairground ride, so do come along. It's going to be very exciting to see if you make it through. I'll give you a badge if you make it through unscathed. Anyway, come and see the tour, richardherring.com for all that news. Some great Rahalastapas coming up, I have to tell you, in the next few weeks. The tour was a lot of fun. Thanks very much to everyone who came. Sit back, relax, and enjoy my stupid fucking podcast.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com. Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great, too. That's why there's UnitedHealthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Leicester Square Theatre. Please welcome a man whose finger is at this very moment travelling in time. Is Richard Herring! Thank you, fans. I am good. Hooray! Welcome. Welcome to Richard Herring's Leicester Square Theatre podcast, or as all the cool kids are calling it, Rahalastapas. There are lots of cool kids in today. They've managed to weather their way. There's been a storm today for people watching this in the future or listening in the future. Terrible storm, but we've managed to. Most of us have managed to get here. So it's good to thank you for coming along and getting through the terrible transport problems. What's happened to me this week? I've been to Vienna this week. I took my wife away on a little, what was her birthday, little romantic sojourn to Vienna in Austria. It's pretty, should have married me, shouldn't you? Have you got, yeah, now you're regretting it. You had your chance as well. I was disappointed, though. I only really went to Vienna because I wanted to see the factory where they make the Viennetta. And I don't have that sort of stupid Ferris wheel. Old cathedral. It's a load of shit, really. My wife also tried to get at me this week. We had a Halloween party this week. It was Halloween the week we did this. She had a cheese board for the guests. That's how sophisticated we are. And she bought some cheddar cheese, but it was Wookiee whole cheddar cheese, which that is a contradiction in terms. That is not... Only cheddar can make cheddar caves are the best. Any fans of Wookiee whole in? I'm going to make this a question for today. So it's a way of... making you know what Wookiee Hole was. I think most of you don't. It's a rival Somerset-based place. And I had a sex dream the other day. It was very exciting. As a married man, I've been married for 18 months now. It's going pretty well. I always thought I'd get married one day. I never dreamt I'd be married for 18 months. Might give it another 18 months, see how that goes. But I had a sex dream, not about my wife. And there was a very sort of a voluptuous, semi-clad woman, and she came up. She was making it very clear she wanted to have sex with me. And I said, I'm sorry, I can't have sex with you, I am married. And she was very insistent, and then I said, no, sorry, I've showed you
showed her my wedding ring, which, you know, it's quite cool of me in some ways, but in a lot of ways it's really fucking annoying, because that is the one place that I am allowed to have sex, is in the dreamscape on that plane, and I turn down. Awful, I'm embarrassed for myself. And other things that have been going on in the world. Russell Brand is trying to overthrow the state, which is good. He's a previous guest, Russell Brand, and trying to form... He hasn't really got any ideas of what will come next, but the rich people are really going to suffer in his new scheme. I don't think he's really thought it through all the way. But do vote. Don't listen to him about the not voting. Even if you're going to change the system, do make sure you vote. It's important, or the British National Party will get in and it'll be your fault. They will be. So that is all I'm going to say about that. So I think I've warmed you up in both that and my... I'm going to show the audience at home some of the... There's a couple of new guys at the front here, aren't usually here. What's your name?
Michael.
Michael, you've got the kind of terrifying black eyes of Eugene Toombs from The X-Files, which... And the demeanour of that. It's quite a good... That was quite a good reference. Do you get that a lot? What do you do for a living, Michael, when you're not crawling through ducts and stuff?
IT.
IT, yeah. That's good. It's a good cover. It's a good cover. And what's your name?
David.
Are you in IT, David?
Yeah,
just cut to the chase. they're all in IT. What's the best thing about IT, David?
Computers.
Yeah.
Computers, says, yeah, that is... That is good. And there is a little tiny... I've been plagued by flies the whole time we've been doing these podcasts, and there's a little tiny midge back here again. So I am ready. I've got an executioner thing. I've electrocuted one person with this, and it was much worse than you imagine it would be. So I'm ready to get that midge this time. Look, we're going to, without further messing around and spoiling your day, because I know why you've come here, will you please welcome my guest in this podcast? He is best known... I think you'll all be here to see him from his appearance... in six pairs of pants. Are we sick of talking about that? I'm going to ask him a bit about that. Will you please welcome Simon Pegg, ladies and gentlemen, from Six Pairs of Pants. Simon Pegg. Come in, sit down. Have a microphone. Simon Pegg, he's off of films. He's off of proper film. Not like the usual shit we get.
Hello.
Hello. How are you doing, Simon?
I'm really well.
Good.
I'm so glad you mentioned Eugene Victor Toombs.
Yes. I thought you would like it.
I got that.
Good. It's him.
Oh, God, he is. He's going to eat my liver.
I'm glad that reference worked. They didn't like the Cracker Jack thing in the warm-up. Fucking hell, I mean, you were primed. So what do you remember about... Oh, we'll get out of the way. What do you remember about Six Pairs of Pants? Can you name... The six pairs of pants.
Yeah, it was myself. Yeah. It was Jessica Stevenson, Hines. Yeah. That's where I met her, and that's where that relationship began. Neil Malarkey, yeah. Simon Schatzberger, Katie Carmichael.
He was the hard one to get. If this was pointless, I think pretty much all of it would be pointless.
Simon Schatzberger, you might not know the name.
You would definitely know.
But if I said to you, it's just possible you could save my life. You might remember that Yellow Pages commercial when he woke up and someone had drawn something on a painting.
Yeah.
It was him. Sally Phillips.
Correct. And no, one more.
No, yeah, there was.
That's only five pairs of pants. No, you're in it. I don't think you've said one of the girls. She's in space.
Sally Jess. It's Katie Carmichael.
Yes. Whew, that would have been embarrassing. So, do you remember any memories of recording? I watched one of them. They're on three of them on YouTube.
It was a sketch show that we made for Meridian TV. And it was like, so it was on everywhere but London. In fact, it was on like in the southeast, but not London.
Right.
And it was kind of a sketch show with some sketches. And it was intermittently funny, as most sketch shows are. But it was a slightly more intermittently funny than most sketch shows are.
Well, I find it quite... Because the two of your... I had Edgar Wright on, and we talked about Asylum as well.
Yes.
Which was another early sketch show with... Which, again, it felt a bit like someone had gone, there's six funny people, let's put them all together and see if that makes a show.
Well, that was a weird one. We got all these comics together in a room back in the day. This is 96, maybe. And there was a whole bunch of us, and we started riffing around the idea of a comedy show set in a psychiatric hospital. And... I won't name them, but they are unknown now, comics. They left because they didn't agree with it, because they thought it was bad taste. And I said, I know a girl who could be in it. Her name's Jess. And that's how Jess got into Asylum, and that's how Spaced happened. So it was very much thanks to certain comics' moral standpoints that that show got made. Thank you very much.
Him. That's good. But it's sort of weird. It's weird seeing those. I mean, it's sort of weird seeing those early things. And Simon, the other Simon, is a very funny guy. And you kind of just. It's sort of weird the way different. I mean, you know, I could say this person the amount of Fist of Fun. It's weird the way some people's careers take off and they become superstars, and some people's don't. It's sort of. It's kind of quite random.
We had a very interesting talking about Fist of Fun in 1998, and I supported Steve Coogan on tour. And we had this little thing every Friday night when we'd finished, wherever we were playing in the country, you know, up and down the country, we'd all go back to that whatever hotel we were staying in and we'd watch Fist of Fun. And it became like, the gags from the show became like our sort of tour bus shtick, including Paul Putner's Curious Orange.
If you want a free copy of it, I think that was probably...
That was this morning,
Richard, not Judy, but that's might be coming out at some point. I met you in Hull on that tour.
And I would have told you about that because we were all full of it and a bit sort of starstruck by it.
No, I remember. All I remember is seeing. I'd been really drinking heavily the night before. I think I had literally just been sick in the car park of our hotel.
Nice.
And then you bounded up very excited. And
hello.
Said hello. And yes, I think your was it your costume lady wanted to try on the Curious Orange's head.
That's right. Yes. Yeah. So we put it on. That's right.
That's what I remember. Oh, about that. What was it like touring with Steve Coogan? What stories can you tell us about that from behind the scenes?
None.
It was a lot of fun. It was like being in a band for a year, and none. It was a lot of We did 102 dates across the country, and then we went into the West End for 3 months and did the Lyceum, you know. So it ended up being like 100 and God knows what shows, but it was enormous fun. And then in the summer of that year, me and Julia Davis, who was also supporting Steve, we made Big Train that summer. So we stopped the tour, made Big Train, and then went into the West End. So it was a great year. It was a really fun year. You know, it was all at the beginning of things. Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm going to ask an emergency question straight away.
Do it.
I'm going to ask you the new one.
If I'd have told you a story from the Coogan tour, you wouldn't need an emergency question.
I was hoping for, you know, a bit of. So I imagine you got colds, that's what I'm saying. But would you rather have a tit? I don't know why I'm reading it off a piece of paper, I know this, but I'm going to pretend. Would you rather have a tit that dispensed talcum powder? So it would be like a woman's breast on your body, just
yeah.
one.
Yeah.
But every time you touched it, unlimited... Well, not there'll be an unlimited supply, some talcum powder would come out.
Poof. Right.
Instead of that, you can't have both.
I have to have one.
Well, you have to have one of them. Or a finger that could travel through time. So you can... Only your finger can travel through time. But you can direct where it's going, and you can still operate it. But
I obviously the latter.
Yeah.
Because then I could reach forward to a time when everybody had a talc tip and dispense at my leisure.
I'm not sure that. I don't think the talc would come back.
Oh, it's going to happen.
You might have a bit of talc on the end of your finger.
Just come back with the talky finger.
But if you got the wrong tip, then you'd just be,
the other one
you'd be arrested. You'd be arrested for sexual harassment.
Oh, yeah, because you're not allowed to touch the non talc tit, are you? In this incredible future we're developing here.
It'd be quite good. I was sort of thinking about this because this is quite a new and emergency question, but presumably, you know, if sort of some kind of wormhole that has opened up in time.
It would have to be that big for the finger.
But then, you know, there are other things like that that could, that sort of dimensions. It's interesting that I've chosen a finger. I mean, it wouldn't work for me because my penis is a lot, has a lot more girth. My penis would just become, I'd have to put it in flaccid. I'm not sure it would even go in flaccid. And then if something sexy happened on the other side, it'd be like an amazing cock ring. It'd be like a cock ring of time.
Time itself as a cock ring.
That erection would never go down.
Tempus fugit.
In the future or the past, people would think I was amazingly priapic.
Yes.
In the present, not so much. These are 46.
You could thrust it forward to a time when you didn't have to have unprotected sex anymore, and then you'd never have to wear a condom. That would be fantastic.
What?
Silence. I'm taking these off. They're steaming up.
It is. It's getting hot up here with this talk. Well, I'll ask you this other emergency question, which I don't ask every week now. Simon Pegg from off Star Trek and other stuff. Have you ever tried to suck your own cock?
Oh!
Oh, have I? Well, I mean, you know, it depends what you mean by try, doesn't it? I think we've all had a go. Anyone with a cock's had a go.
Yeah.
Whether or not success was achieved is our own stories.
Is that going to keep that to yourself?
No, never.
Never. It's because it's now he's in Hollywood and everything. He's not allowed to...
I got someone to suck my cock for me now.
Is it that little thing from Star Trek? Is that little...
He's just the right size. That's what he has. The whole backstory of Scotty and Keenza is the... Sorry, he's a little cock sock machine.
I should have known his name. But it's just that odd little thing.
That's actually Deep Roy, who is a venerable old short actor.
Yes.
Who you've seen in... the thing I guess people know from recently was Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. Yeah. He was every Oompa Loompa. He's an amazing character. He's been in the business so long and played so many weird little small things. But he's absolutely lovely man, really nice man. And very good at blowjobs.
Front page of the Sun. So you have, in fact, I think you're the only actor in the world, I may be wrong about this because I've got this off the internet, who has appeared in Star Trek, Doctor Who, and... an incarnation of Star Wars Clone Wars.
Oh, yes.
I don't think any other actor has appeared.
I think maybe there's one. Yeah. I think, like, maybe Noel Clarke or somebody has done something. I did a voice in... And I was an act of utmost hypocrisy because I was so vociferously opposed to the new Star Wars films. But when the chance to play Dengar, who was a bounty hunter from The Empire Strikes Back... I'm just losing everybody now.
Honestly, well, not if it's my usual crowd. They're just in rap going, is he real or not? Is he... Scotty, it's him.
I had to jump at that, you know. Yeah. And... I could feel like the sort of militant Star Wars fans going, you fucking asshole. But it was fun.
Were there any other 1970s, 1980s sci-fi things that you would like to be in? Sapphire and Steel?
Oh, well, that'd be great, wouldn't it, to bring that back?
Tomorrow People? Would you be in it?
They've just started doing that again in the States. Yeah, I noticed there was a show called The Tomorrow People, but I don't know if it's the same about the kind of psychic teenagers with the hand opening.
If they don't have jaunt, it's not...
Jaunt.
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 Jaunt. That's what they used to do, and then they used to press their belt, or I think they maybe had a wrist thing in some incarnations of it. Going a bit too far back for most of our young crowd here.
I remember the only one I remember starred Nicholas Lyndhurst, and it was about Hitler being an alien from the planet Treeborg. And they kept having a melting Hitler face on the screen, and his eyeball came out.
Yeah, that right rings a bell. The guy who was in it was in a band called Flintlock.
That's right.
See, no, this is... I'm trying to get into... You know the comedian Peter Kay does the kind of nostalgia comedy that everyone recognises? I'm trying to get into nostalgia comedy that, like, one person gets. Tonight, you were that one person.
Yes.
But it's very exciting for you.
I just see how excited I was when you said Flintlock.
Flintlock. I was like, yeah, the band! I think Sapphire and Steel. I remember a great episode of Sapphire and Steel, which was a sci-fi thing with Joanna Lumley, and David McCallum, the Invisible Man.
Yeah.
And he's in The Great Escape as well, which I'm a massive fan of. There was one episode there where I was thinking that's really stuck with me, where there was a sort of faceless man who would hide in all photographs.
That was terrifying.
And then he would turn around and be a faceless man. And at the end of it, they said, all you have to do, you'll be fine, all you have to do is never appear in any other photograph again in your life. Which, 1975, would probably have been doable.
Easy.
Yeah. But now...
Now it would be an issue.
It would be pretty difficult. You would never really be able to go
That
out.
Guy would be quids in now with all the fucking iPhones and shit. Yeah.
It was good. Well, so you're not going to do that. That's all right. And you're working with Tom Cruise... Mission Impossible.
Five now. Yeah.
You've done 3 to 5.
I did 3. Yeah, I was. Me and Edgar Wright were writing Hot Fuzz in our office one day, and I'd literally said in it. This sounds ridiculous, but I'd literally said in an interview when Shaun of the Dead sort of was doing well, and some journalist said, "Oh, what are you going to go off to Hollywood now? Like it's something that people do, you know, like cross a bridge and they never come back." And I very sort of adamantly said, "No, I'm not going to go off and do fucking I don't know Mission Impossible 3." Like I said it like it was a film I made up, you know, like where people make up video games and they're called Death Kill 7, and it's just like a really rubbish film. It didn't even exist. And then, like, 6 weeks later, J.J. Abrams called up. Because he'd just seen Shaun of the Dead, and he said, oh, I enjoyed the film. And he said, oh, see if that guy wants to work with me. And said, do you want to be in Mission Impossible 3? And I said, yeah!
And
I said, oh, no, no,
oh,
oh, no.
I can't. I told the mirror that I wouldn't.
Have you got anything else?
But I, no, and then the next thing I did like 3 or 4 days on it. That's all I did. But it was very strange to suddenly be, I had this massive speech on the first day, a great big long rambling exposition about some a weapon or something. And I couldn't fucking do it. And Tom Cruise and Ving Rhames came on set, and he was so patient with me because I just kept messing it up. Because I was like, I've won a competition to be in a film. And I was really trying to hold it together. And eventually I did it. And then the fourth one, you know, I was a little more used to things by then. Yeah. And then the fifth one we're going to make next year. And it's interesting. He's a very interesting character.
Yes. Your character or Tom Cruise?
Tom Cruise.
Okay.
My character's meaningless.
Yes.
No, he's an extraordinary person. Everyone that meets him kind of just goes, and a lot of people have an opinion on him, but everyone that's met him kind of likes him because he's very, I don't know, he's sort of built for what he does, which is to make movies and be a big star, and that seems to be his raison d'etre, and he does it very, very well. And he's very generous and extremely professional and lovely. And you kind of like, you meet him and you come away all like, So I every time, if ever he contacts me in any way, if ever I get a sort of, you know, a pigeon arrives with his little note on, I get very excited still.
Yeah. Well, is it sort of mind-blowing, or is it just, does it seem natural to you that you are now in Star Trek? And, you know, obviously when you were doing Space, it was all about paying homage to a lot of these genres. Is it mind-blowing, or has it just happened and it feels...
The thing is, because it happens over a very long... It's like if you jump into a very hot bath without lowering yourself in, you'll scream your head off. But if you lower yourself in very gently, you'll just sort of go, ha, ha, ha. And I am at a state of... permanently, just because it's very strange. But also, you realise it's just a business, and you know, it demythologizes itself as you enter into it. So, you know, once you're sort of part of it. I mean, being on the set of Star Trek is amazing because the sets are incredible, and we're very excited about what we're doing because it's Star Trek, and you know, no one ever loses sight of that. But it is also a job, and you just sort of get on with it. I threw up on the last one. Really violently. I was twice actually. One was food poisoning, but one I had to do a scene in the film where I had to run across this long space hangar, and I have to sort of let Kirk and Benedict Cumberbatch in through this hole. I'm trained not to say that, but it's Khan. And
I had be good to, if it was Benedict Cumberbatch.
Yeah, if it was just Benedict Cumberbatch. We got an actor coming in. And I had to sprint down. It was like a massive set in Playa in California, where they built the spruce moose. You know, spruce goose. Was it moose or goose?
What is it called? Wikipedia nerd. Spruce goose.
Yes, they built that plane there, and it's a gigantic hangar. And they build sets there that are too big to go into film studios. So we built the hangar of this ship, the Vengeance, and I had to run down it. And I ran so fast, and I just wanted to impress JJ because he's that kind of guy, because he's a very lovely man, but you just want to do your best for him all the time. I sprinted down, and I fucking ran so fast, and all the crew were clapping and stuff, and the little quad bike had to fight to keep up with me, and I like nailed it, and it was like everyone was going, woo, like this at the end, and then JJ went, man, that was great. You do it again? And I went, yeah. Is Timmy Tumate Sinada again? And then, so I had a little break, and I recovered. My heart rate went down to 189. And then I did it again. And by that time, I was just like that. And JJ said, can we just do one more? We're going to change the lens, come in a bit closer. And I'm like... So I did it again. And at the end of that take, I just went, I'm just going to go back to my trailer for a quick pee, and I'll be back in a minute. And I vomited so much, because I just had my lunch before. I didn't know we were doing that scene, and I'd eaten a whole plate of mezze. The catering in America is fantastic. And as a Brit over there, I just eat everything I can, because it might not happen again. So I basically vommed up a lovely lunch.
I had a very similar experience on... It's almost identical on the set of Fist of Fun series 2 when Stuart did a sketch about the boy who cried wolf.
Yes.
And it was a routine he'd done for years, and it was about the boy who cried wolf, and then he was delighting in making everyone run up the hill to him and stuff. But yeah. I just played one of the villagers. I wasn't even a main role in it. And we'd been out filming, like, we'd done all the filming stuff in one place. We stayed in the hotel the night before, and I got really pissed.
Yeah.
I did do this all the time. And we had to run up and down this hill so many times. And even just the sketch with the retake. And then I wasn't even in the... I was just felt like I was going to die.
You were chundering somewhere.
So that is as good as your story. And the same. It seems like I've seen a couple of interviews with the cast and you.
I'm taking this jacket off.
I think you should. It's got a powerfully hot up here. This is how I get the suicide confessions out of people. Just make it. I don't know who I am anymore.
You melted Stephen Fry. That's what it was.
I melted him down. It seems like you have a good sort of camaraderie. You're playing practical jokes on each other on the set.
Well, that wasn't that. I'm not really like a joke. You hear about this sometimes. You hear about the likes of, you know, Clooney and Brad Pitt all playing jokes on each other. I'm not a big practical joker. I don't like it when people get embarrassed. I can't watch any show where anyone gets embarrassed. Like, I can't watch any of the talent shows, or I can't even watch Strictly Come Dancing, because I just don't like seeing people get embarrassed in any way, and I don't like those practical joke shows. But we were filming at this nuclear facility in Northern California called NIF, which is the National Ignition Facility, where they are trying to create nuclear fusion by bombarding helium atoms with something, and every 7 hours, and they're trying to ignite a small sun, like in Spider-Man 2.
Okay. And, sounds quite dangerous.
Yeah. But they will. When it happens, it will be a sustainable source of energy, which will, you know, completely make.
If it doesn't destroy the world.
If it doesn't destroy. If it doesn't just suck us all into a warpy, dimension.
Yeah. If you get your finger in it.
But it would end dependency on fossil fuels forever. Right. It will change the whole geopolitical face of the Earth. And just in passing, I said to the guy who ran the place, Guy Bruno, this Belgian scientist, I said, when is this going to happen? He said, about 6 months. I was like, what the fuck? Are you kidding me? He said, yeah, about 6 months to 5 years. Absolutely convinced that he'll have nuclear fusion.
Yeah.
And I was doing a voiceover for BP during the Olympics, and they were doing all this talking about stuff about mining. In 30 years' time, we'll be able to find oil. And I said, you know, this is going to be fucking useless by the time you get there because of this fusion thing. But anyway, I said to Chris Pine, who plays Kirk in makeup, one day, have you put your neutron cream on? Because otherwise you'll get sunburn. And Chris was like, huh? And I said, well, if you don't wear this special cream, then you'll get like the ambient radiation in the air. It'll give you a little bit of a rash. You just got to put on this neutron cream. And then this became this. Once I let Chris on in that I was lying, and it wasn't. I was just lying. I was just lying for fun, lying. And then we started to trick successive cast members with greater elaboracy, if there's such a word, until we had pots of neutron cream that the makeup department made. And Tommy Gormley, who's our first AD, would have the whole crew jumping up and down and shaking their hands to get rid of the ions in their in their fingers. And it became like this giant orchestrated practical joke till we finally got Benedict Cumberbatch, because he was sort of late coming up, so he walked into this, and we had him like doing all that. He kept doing this stuff between takes, and me and him and Chris were doing a scene one day, and it was him. He was being very, you know, doing his stuff like this, talking about getting to the airlock before the crew minimal crawl. All this dialogue he had to do, he kept fucking it up, and me and Chris were in a bit of a giggly mood. It was the end of the shoot, so he was getting really frustrated with himself. And then at lunchtime, he came up and he said, "Guys, I'm ever so sorry about the whole that thing that getting my lines wrong. It was that I had a bit of a headache. I think the ions were getting to me." Chris and I were just like, yeah, really? And then we eventually were like, how are we going to get out of this? What's our end game here? Because Benedict was so in deep with this. He was so convinced he was being poisoned that we didn't know how to free him in any kind of funny way. So we said, let's write a funny, like, disclaimer form. And we'll say, I, Benedict Cumberbatch, hereby accept the liability to put on neutron cream, which is a fictitious emollient, and I am an idiot for believing that it's true. So we gave him the form. He read it, signed it, and gave it back to me. So then we were fucked, because it was like, well, what do we do now? And eventually we had Benedict read out the form. So he said the thing, the damning thing out loud. And it was a wonderful reveal. What? It just went out of control. Yeah. I'm not a practical joker, but that was fantastic.
The thing is, actors are all pretty stupid, though.
Aren't they? They really? But Benedict was so kind of, I'll sign it. Whatever. What's the scene? And it was great. It was. It's a very happy crew, and I hope it continues to be that way. We're going to make another one, I think, next year. And it's very nice to work. They're all very... All those kids are all... good people, you know. There's not a Hollywood douchebag among them. They're all sort of very cool and grounded and you know, you go over there thinking people are going to be weird and difficult, and I've not really come across anyone like that yet.
I think it works very well. I've seen the first one. I was going to watch the second one.
Maybe one night.
Get on DVD. Yeah, and but it's a good way of reimagining it without having to go back to you all having to be like William Shatner.
It's kind of cake and eat it because I thought it was a very clever device was to kind of like to reset it so that we can start from the beginning. But you have Leonard Nimoy is in it, so that says everything that you know and love about Star Trek, everything you saw in all those TV shows and films, it all happened, it's all safe, but we can start again now in a different timeline. So I thought it was a smart bit of writing.
Dangerous, though, when you get into timelines. I'm very I'm very obsessed about timelines making sense. Yeah. Have you watched Goodnight, Sweetheart?
One of the better time travel pieces.
I've actually... I've been joking about this for a long time, but I've actually had a meeting with one of the creators of Goodnight, Sweetheart. About me writing a new version about a man from now who's obsessed with Goodnight, Sweetheart, who goes down that passage because he's so obsessed with it and ends up on the set of Goodnight, Sweetheart.
What an incredibly meta, brilliant idea.
So we'll see if that comes off.
I also thought that show promised that there were great things afoot. It was like there was so much to play with about him in the past and what his effects on it, but it never seemed to... They never took it...
It was quite hard to have the meeting because I couldn't go. The thing is, goodness, shit. But he was very nice. I call it Gary Sparrow's paucity of ambition.
I think it.
I think that sums up the problem.
Friday night, BBC One.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads, generally, for most people, are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much. But when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And UnitedHealthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
So this is something I want to ask you. You don't have to answer this if you don't want to, but your godfather to Chris Martin's daughter,
I am, yeah.
Apple.
Yes.
Was there no point in the christening where you just thought, maybe I should step... I don't know, they don't have, if anyone here has any objection to this.
I think, it's hard when you name... It's, you know, when you name your kid, you have to kind of... you don't want them to be named by everyone else's name, but it has to mean something to you. And, you know, I think the thing was she was sweet and unique, and that was kind of the reason.
Also, there's loads of apples.
But she's never going to go... Let's face it, she's never going to be in a school where anyone goes, your name's Apple, because they're probably all got interesting names as well. So, you know...
Okay, that's fair enough. there was something very exciting I had to ask you about. That's that. Oh, might work, because I think you might have done, sort of. Have you ever, this is an emergency question, have you ever seen a ghost?
No.
No.
My granddad rode through a man on his bike, apparently. That's not slang in any way. I just rode through this guy the other night. It was amazing. He was apparently riding home on his bike one night, and a guy stepped out in front of the road and he just went straight through him.
Wow.
But I don't believe
anything.
I think
your granddad's just a murderer.
Oh, wait a minute. No, he hit a man. That was it. That was it. It said rode through on his insurance form.
Yeah.
No, I don't believe... I would love to see that. Just to get some fucking proof of anything. Because I have no belief in anything beyond what I know and what I know that can be proven and all that kind of stuff. I was at my daughter's Harvest Festival play the other week. And she started... It was a fly, wasn't it? Yeah. You got the thing?
I haven't got it. It's too small.
I got one, but my dog's
scared of
it.
By the time I've got it, I need it attached to the end of my arm.
Does it go... Bing!
Yeah, look at here.
Oh, it's good.
It's really. I would do it on you, but it really hurts.
No, it does hurt. I had one, but my dog got frightened of the noise of the flies exploding.
Right.
And I think it was because she could hear them screaming. Because they hear... they hear something more than we do.
That's true.
And it's just, no! That's what...
My children! My millions of fly children!
It was too disturbing. Anyway, I was at her Harvest Festival thing at her school, and they, you know, it's a multi-faith school, and they would obviously they look at Diwali and Ramadan and Eid and all that kind of stuff. But it was a Harvest Festival, and at the end, everyone said a prayer. We all said a prayer, and I was kind of all the parents sort of put their heads down, and I was looking around, what the fuck is this? I was slightly, and then the other night she said before we went to bed, she went, can we say a prayer? And I'm like, all right, fine. And because I wanted to have magic in her life, you know, it's not like I'm going to sort of say, no, Santa's doesn't exist. And so she can choose whatever she wants. So she said, and then she said, I don't want to pray to Jesus tonight, I want to pray to me. And then she said, and so we put our hands together and closed our eyes. She went, hooray for Jesus, no, hooray for me, hooray for daddy, hooray for mummy, I'm going to kick you in the face. Amen. Delightful.
New religion.
See, that's what you get when you have kids. You get that kind of stuff.
Don't tell Tom Cruise about that new religion. He'll love that.
Hey, listen.
He'll go crazy for that one.
That never came. In 7 months of working together, that I was all waiting for that to come up. Never did. I was.
He's biding his time. Don't you worry.
Yeah, I don't know. I find all that stuff intriguing. I don't know what the hell's going on there.
Yeah, it's made up.
Yeah, of course it is. But why?
I hope that explains it. So they could get loads of money off.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it's pretty obvious.
Yeah, it is. But I'm sure Tom Cruise is very nice. You've done lots of comedy films, but you have done serious films. You played probably the most evil character in theatre in cinema history when you played Toby Young in. Whatever that rubbish film was called, The Secret
of My Success.
It was
Sidney Young.
It's Toby Young. Don't pretend it's not him.
No, it had to be Sidney because I couldn't play Toby because it just would.
Because if you started methoding,
I had to make him nice.
Home.
I had to make him likable. You know, he had to be sort of someone you could root for.
People don't know Toby Young is. Do you know who Toby Young is? Yeah, they do know. They just disdain him. Hopefully, that is. It's a hot. I was in a boat race. I did an Oxford Cambridge boat race TV show.
Yeah.
Where we had to learn to row and go against each other, and Toby Young was one of the rowers in my boat.
Oh dear.
Kind of got. Jonathan Aitken was also one of the rowers in the boat, and I like Jonathan Aitken a lot more than Toby Young.
Yeah. Toby Young just doesn't. He has a thing where he doesn't care. He has no desire to be liked. I
know.
He doesn't. It bothers me if I do something to upset someone, I'm like, oh yeah, I'm sorry. What did I do? Not because. I don't think it's a weakness, it's just that I like, you know, friendship and unity, and I'm a bit of a hippie in that respect because it's nice to be, everything's nice when it's nice. Fuck, I'm bland. But with Toby, it's like, he just doesn't fucking care.
No.
And it's kind of weird, you know.
We were training for the marathon at the same time, me and Emma Kennedy, who was in that as well, and we went for a run, went for a jog up the thing, because we were doing lots of rowing, so we didn't really, but we just thought, oh, we should do a bit of a run. And he said, oh, can I come with you? I said, yeah, and because I was a bit faster than Emma, near the end I said, oh, I'll just go a bit faster and go ahead, and Emma said, fine. And then Toby Young started sprinting like you in that tunnel. He started sprinting like it was a race. So he caught up with me and then sprinted on. And I was just going, well, I'm not going to race you. It's not a race.
I just believe
what
it,
a
yeah.
dick. I was watching American Werewolf in London the weekend again, yes. which was one of my favourite films when I was a teenager. And
me too. I was one of my the first horror films I ever saw.
Yeah. Do you like the bit
with the nurse?
Yeah,
the yeah.
Good. That's what I just wanted to say. If you remember, but it's amazing. I think you've got like teenage crushes that you've talked about, but it's amazing to see something. It's still very vivid when you see someone. If I could, if my finger could travel back in time, I can tell you where it would go to.
To Jenny Agassiz.
It would go to the pool in Logan's Run when she's swimming around in there. She wouldn't even notice. It'd just be like a little ripple.
If it was your finger,
yes. We've explained.
Was she that? I had a work with John Landis on something, and he had Jenny Agutter came and did a little cameo in it. And it's strange when you meet someone who, and I'm sure she must get it all the time, but who represents, you know, your sort of early masturbatory
you've
fantasy.
You've wanked an awful until the tape goes cloudy.
Who you had videos. A wank over.
It used to be videos, and I had the video off the TV of American Werewolf in London.
Yeah.
And there was two bits. How wonderful that you can go back, because you can't really go back and use... As an older man, pornography loses its lustre quite quickly.
Yeah. But let's but that say, was... I bet I was the same. Let's say them together. The first one was the shower.
And the
second was the decapitation.
No? It was Lindsay Drew in See You Next Wednesday.
Ah, of course.
Hello? No, there's no one of that name here. Who is the mother of the oldest child in Outnumbered?
Isn't his dad...
Yep. His dad is also a porn star, bend over.
Yeah.
And his mum is Lindsay Drew. You know, that's you meet people at work, don't you? And, you know, if you're spunking over their tits, sometimes you go...
It's a classic office romance.
I was bend over, which is something I wish I had the courage to do this. Bend over was on before... You know who bend over is? Just pretend you don't... No, that lady isn't there. She's not, no, I don't. He's just a kind of sleazy porn actor.
Yeah.
I haven't really seen. It's weird. I don't really like British porn.
It's a bit too close to home. Yeah. It could be happening next door, and that's weird.
British accent, but it's all more, like they're almost like comedy things.
Yeah.
Well. Ooh, so look at her. She's nice and cheap. It's like that. Hello, love. Hello. We're just making a film. Would you want to take part? Oh yes, please.
It is that. He did like an hour long Edinburgh show about his life.
Did he?
Bend over, yeah. And was on in the same theatre as me just before I was on doing whatever show that was that year. And one of the pieces of merchandise he sells after his show is a dildo of his own erection.
Oh, God.
Which, you know, I'd be interested to see how those would sell if I offered those.
Yeah, I know. You should do one of your own.
And talking of that, actually, there is a website which I talked to Dara about the other week called Dirty Britcom Confessions. Have you seen this?
I have not.
In which people go on and reveal their sexual fantasies about British comedians.
Is that right?
And I mean, everyone's on there. Stoofer's on there. Everyone's on there. your ones are mainly based on you and Nick Frost, which a lot of double act ones are. But this, I just want to see how you feel about this. This is someone's fantasy. I went out with a guy once because he looked like Nick Frost, and he let me pretend to be Simon Pegg in various roles.
Really?
Does that make you happy to think that that's
happy? Happy is a word. I feel. Dirty in a way. How strange. And wonderful. Absolutely. I
don't know.
That.
It could be a man or it could be a woman. We don't know. It could be a woman pretending to be Simon Pegg.
I ship that.
It could be a man. It could
you know,
be
that's
a...
internet parlance for supporting a fictitious relationship.
Okay.
I've just learnt that. There's a lot of Freeman and Cumberbatch stuff on the web at the moment, which is really disturbing. Lots of pictures of Benedict like biting Martin's ear, blood dribbling onto the pillow. And, oh, I don't look for it. It's just...
It is odd to see it about your friends and yourself. This is another one. I so badly want to fuck Simon Pegg on that beanbag in Spaced. Then we can play Resident Evil.
After?
Yeah, I think that's the wrong way. I think...
It's a great post-coital game, listen.
I think play it first, just in case. It just doesn't go as well as you think, and then you're stuck there on the beanbag, a bit sticky. Resident Evil. Do you think there's any chance that you will have sex with that man or woman who wants to have sex with you on a beanbag? Do you still have the beanbag?
No. Oh. Or any sex drive. hearing that story. No, sadly. No. I'm happily married.
That's in your dreams.
In my dreams.
Isn't that annoying? To
I got a blowjob in my dream last night.
Yeah, exactly. That's
my problem. But from someone I didn't even know. Yeah. I think it was that guy.
There aren't very interesting ones about me. Best one about me is I'd quite like to get high and fuck Richard Herring. It would be really intense. It wouldn't. A, because we got high and I'd just be probably fall asleep. And I'd really do that and it would be confused. I'd be like in the Norman Wisdom on Acid sketch. I'd go, why? There are peas coming out of my face. I don't think it would be I think it would be awkward and embarrassing. If you're listening, that person, thanks for the... But your teenage crushes, actually, because I was talking about Jenny Agutter, Sigourney Weaver?
Yeah, big time, yeah.
Alien.
Yeah, that was incredible for at a young age to, because in a very sort of divisive way, you look back at it now, she strips down to a very scanty outfit for a young boy.
Yeah,
I don't know, my voice is getting really deep talking about it. and then we worked with her as well, and she was everything that we hoped she'd be. She was so lovely and she came over and did a bunch of press for us and stuff. And on the first night when we were filming. We were in New Mexico, and it was her first night on set, and she just was sat like over there, and all the young people were sat here, and we could see her sitting on her own. And me and Nick went, "We should go and say something to her, right?" So we walked over and went, "All right, Sigourney, you want to come and hang out with us? Maybe have a cup of coffee and stuff." And she was like, "Yeah, all right." She was like just as kind of nervous and cagey as we were, and then came over and was an absolute delight. And she's fabulous. So really charismatic, and I always think the true sort of indication of someone as a person is just often their professionalism when it comes to something that she's a fucking Sigourney Weaver, but she just gave it everything and she totally bought into it. And we had her say, we had Blythe Danner, who was it was in the film, she says, "Get away from her, you bitch," to Sigourney Weaver, which is Sigourney, her line from Aliens. And we had Sigourney give Blythe the line reading of the line, and like Nick and I were just coming everywhere. It was like, I mean, it was ridiculous. It was such a nerdgasm moment. She's, I've got a huge love for her.
And I asked Nick Frost when he was on what he thought your worst film you'd ever been in was. And he refused to answer, which I thought was very sweet, because there's loads to choose from.
Yeah.
What do you think your worst one that you've been in is?
It's difficult the trouble, I always gauge these things in terms of the experience of making them. What ends up being judged is, something different. It's the product that gets judged. And, for me, it's like the process always, and I'm very... I haven't done a film which I've not enjoyed. It's difficult for me to... I did a film called Free Jimmy, which was a Norwegian animation about an elephant with a certain poundage of heroin sewn into his anus. This is true. And it was a really odd... I'd done the translation. I translated it, not from Norwegian. It had been translated into English, and I translated it into Norwegian English, into English English, and tried to wring some comedy out of it. But it was a bizarre, dark Scandinavian story. There were Latvian people getting their heads blown up, and the elephant was addicted to speed. It didn't work in the final analysis, and so, with all the greatest respect to Chris Nelson who wrote it, and I would probably say Free Jimmy.
Okay, I'll check that one out. See if it beats Run, Fat Boy, Run. So,
come on. Run, Fat Boy, Run, right? When it's on Channel 4, you keep it on because it's a sweet film. And it's like, it's about a guy and he's got to get Tandy Newton back.
When it's on Channel 5.
It's not, it's on 4. I have no films on... Yes, I do. But
I'm only jealous because I tried to write something almost the same as that.
So, oh, did you?
Yeah. So I'm annoyed.
Sorry.
I just wasn't sure I was going to... I have mentioned it in another podcast, so I thought I'd better... you've done loads of really good films.
I'm very proud of Run, Fat Boy, Run. I'll have you know.
I know. Gym feet, it's good. It's got Hank Azaria in it. It's good.
I know. Let that pause play out.
But I very much enjoyed The World's End, which I saw recently, and I saw I'm very excited because Edgar let me see the first half of it before he was even out.
Oh, cool!
But then that was annoying because then I didn't know what happened next. It just got to the good bit. They're going to kill all the end. But you don't drink anymore.
I don't. No.
So you're going out drinking like you used to drink a bit.
Like... I used to drink, a lot, and then I decided it was time to not drink anymore, and that was 3 years ago. So
how easy did you find it to give up drinking?
Pretty easy, not in a way that was like, I felt like it was something I had to do, just because it was, I turned 40, I was basically a midlife crisis, I think. I'd had my daughter, and I didn't feel like that tallied with the other, and I wanted to be able to wake up in the morning and be sprightly and play and not be a sort of, fuck off, kind of dad. And I quit. And also that happened at the time when I started to get ready for Mission Impossible 4. So I had to kind of get in shape. So alcohol was the first thing to go. And I was amazed at how that helped me get fit and lose weight, you know, because, you know, that's what I had to do at that time. Otherwise, I'd lose my job. So, and it just kind of went on. And I enjoy not drinking now. I can drive into town. The only downside about not drinking is that if you go out with your friends, about 10 o'clock, every single one of them becomes a complete cunt. And you just think, why is this happening? And it's because you were also a complete cunt when you were drinking. Yeah. You just didn't notice. But everybody, even my wife, will become like this bizarre cackling stranger who I don't really like. And so that is the only downside. Yeah. Otherwise, it's like, it's a gift to not
Although
drink.
That must be useful in terms of acting... drunk, if you're sober and watching people drunk, you actually know how people act. Because no one really knows how they act when they're actually drunk themselves.
Exactly,
unless you film yourself drunk and then try to recreate that.
There was a great show. Have you heard of it? The Worcester Group, which is the American sort of performance art collective that Willem Dafoe was part of. And they did a show called LSD, Just the High Points. And they basically dropped acid, filmed themselves tripping, and then did a show where they just acted what they saw, you know. Yeah. There's no end to that story. I just thought it was... I've always liked that as a good idea.
You should try it with booze now, especially if you haven't had a drink for 3 years.
I'd be fucked.
Fucking amazing. What a brilliant end to the podcast that would be. Let's bring some booze in. And you grow your own veg... You've gone all health conscious and you grow your own vegetables.
No, we just got a garden and the garden had a little vegetable patch. And we'd moved in there a few years ago and hadn't done anything with it. And then this year we decided we planted a bunch of stuff and they grew. it was like, oh, it was a cabbage and some carrots. And there was suddenly a pepper, and that was amazing.
Well,
that
is kind of amazing.
And then you eat them, and they don't you don't die, and it's like, well, I did that myself. But we want someone to help out, you know, because we're not very good at horticulture, and growing vegetables is a particularly specific thing, you know, it's something that you have to really know about. And so, a friend of ours has a friend who's an expert. And we want her to come and do our vegetable garden, but it happens to be Kim Wilde, which seemed to be like the most amazing thing. If Kim Wilde does our vegetable garden, it'll just be so cool. I'll have to sing "Kids in America" quietly while she's digging up my tomatoes.
Did you lose a tree today in the storm?
I did.
Wow.
A venerable old willow. I woke up and looked out the window and it's giant, great big willow tree was on its, like, torn out of the ground. And it was a terrible sight.
Ooh. Can you pop it back in again?
It's not, no. It's already been sawn up and put into piles. It was pretty scary. Because it was the violence of it. All its innards were like red.
Right.
Like where it snapped over and the insides of the tree were red like blood.
Saying he was bleeding.
Yeah, it looked like...
So that Roald Dahl story where... was the same thing where the guy can hear...
I think the dog heard it scream as well when it fell over.
Well, I'm sorry for your loss. But, you know, it's fire, wouldn't it?
Can you burn
it?
Yeah, exactly.
Can you burn it?
It'll keep the old wood stove going for... Yeah. The long winter nights. I'm painting a very bucolic picture. I live in Crouch End,
Let me see what other emergency questions I've got. I'm really hoping this one will come good right now. Have you ever seen a Bigfoot?
No, but I was convinced at Cub Camp in 1983 that we'd discovered a wood beast living in the Forest of Dean.
Right.
Because we found what we thought was a footprint. And me and the rest of the Cubs convinced ourselves that we'd discovered a British Bigfoot living in the West Country. It turned out to be untrue.
No. Are you sure?
I'm not sure, to be honest. It might be real.
Was it very big, the foot, or was it just medium size?
It was about the size of
a child's sandal.
it was the size of our Kayla's foot, basically. but we were so immersed in this kind of role play that we discovered this. We called it the Wood Beast, that we all got really scared. But I've never seen a Bigfoot.
No, that's a shame. It would be brilliant if you had.
Has anyone ever said yes?
No, not yet. But, it's a slow burner. And when it comes good, it's going to explode. And oh, yeah, I did, actually. I forgot. I did. And talking of the West Country, you went to Bristol University.
I did.
But what do you think is best, Wookie Hole or Cheddar Caves?
Well, I actually, when we were making Hot Fuzz, I lived in Wookie Hole.
Actually in the cave?
Yeah.
Like a witch?
Yeah. I lived in Wookie.
Yeah.
Near the hole.
Yeah.
Near the...
Did you just... say, can I live in Wookiee so that it'd be like Star Wars? Is that way?
I wanted to live in a Wookiee's hole. That's a different fantasy. Because I had to, every day we were shooting in Wells, and it was like 2 miles to Wells, and so I was able to run to work every day because I was trying to keep healthy then as well.
Yeah.
I like Wookiee. I've got a soft spot for Wookiee. Why, are you a big Cheddar man?
Cheddar's the way it's at, man.
But does Cheddar have all the kind of lights and a witch and shit?
No, it doesn't.
Yeah, that's why.
It doesn't need that.
Were scenes from Doctor Who filmed at Cheddar?
No, it doesn't need any of that stuff.
Eat that, Cheddar.
I think Day of the Triffids was filmed in Cheddar Village. Would you eat Wookiee Hole cheddar cheese? I think that's a guess.
I'd give it a go.
I actually did eat it on my pasta today. I'm a terrible. It was delicious. Like Wookiee Hole is much better than cheddar cakes.
Did you feel bad as you ate it because you were betraying your roots?
I felt terribly bad. I've got Frost Wright written down there, and it's like Frost Nixon. But I don't know why I put that. Oh, I thought of a good sitcom for you if you ever come back to the UK.
Off the peg.
It's better than that.
Go on.
Square Peg in a Round Hole.
Okay.
In which you play a nerdy man. It won't be much of a stretch.
It's a bit of a stretch, yeah.
Who works in a manhole.
We should talk about this.
Yeah.
I like it a lot.
I'm really good at pitching. I'm not really, can't be bothered to write stuff. That's my...
Could I go back in time in the show?
It would cross over with my other work. Maybe all of my sitcoms should just have
converge.
A bit where they can go back to Goodnight Sweetheart, however serious it is. It's like Narnia. They
would
find their different way in.
You could just pick like different episodes of Goodnight Sweetheart to crash and be in. And then when you watch Goodnight Sweetheart back, you pick certain extras that you are in. You know what I mean? So it looks like definitely. It's a retroactive.
No, it's exciting. It's a very exciting project I'm not going to do. You didn't go to McDonald's until you were 23 years old.
No, I went to McDonald's for the first time on June the 19th, 1983.
Right.
And I had a treble thick milkshake from the one at the top of Tottenham Court Road. And the reason I know that is because I was in London to see Return of the Jedi. And I remember the date of the Return of the Jedi. And as such, for that reason, remember the date of my first McDonald's treble thick milkshake. And it was like an amazingly exotic thing. And little did I know, it was like, the petrol and strawberries.
But I was the same because I didn't go to McDonald's. My mum and dad would never let me go to McDonald's.
Oh, really?
I grew up in Cheddar, so there wasn't a McDonald's in Cheddar.
Same.
There was one in Bristol. But they just kind of cleverly almost made me not realise we were there. Until I was about 16, I didn't realise these things even existed. Then I became vegetarian when I was 18, so I had about 2 years of eating McDonald's. But it's kind of weird to think that there was a time when you could escape. You're trying to stop your kids eating fast food or your child eating.
I'm trying to stop her watching The Phantom Menace for as long as I can. It's difficult though because you start off and you've got this little blank canvas who's never eaten anything bad and everything's organic and then eventually you start going, oh, it's ice cream, just eat that. And but yeah, you want to encourage them to eat.
But the
well.
Danger is, my parents wouldn't let me, you know, would very rarely let me eat sweets, and they would very rarely let me do that stuff. And then I would just dream of the day. I was like Charlie Bucket, dreaming of the day that I would get like a bar of chocolate to myself. You know, we'd allowed to eat chocolate, but we had to share it between my brother and my sister. Oh. And just the idea of having a bar of chocolate to myself just seemed impossible. My ambitions were to have a whole bar of chocolate myself and to have the blonde one from ABBA appear in my bedroom in just her pants.
Wow.
I still wanted her pants.
Holding a bar of chocolate would be perfect.
And so, but that meant when I could had the means to buy myself a bar of chocolate or the blonde one from ABBA, I did so with gusto.
Yeah.
And ate, look, and that's what happened. So be careful, that's what I'm saying. and you spend a lot of time imagining, and I mean, I don't want to talk about zombies or very much because there's, you know,
it's been done, isn't it?
But you, because what I do, I spend a lot of my time, you imagine zombie attacks and how you would escape from them in real life. I spend a lot of my time imagining terrorist atrocities.
Which are more likely, to be fair.
And I'm in my imagination, I'm really brave. I'm kind of hoping I'll be in one. Just to test whether
it's like somebody
brave.
Stands up about to detonate their waistcoat of death.
Yeah,
you jump on them or something.
Yeah, I sort of work out where I'm in the Westfield, and especially now that's become even more terrifying. But I was terrified beforehand of going to the Westfield. I'm working out where they would be, and then working out where in Starbucks I could run up the stairs, and then when they came, I know where I can hide around the corner, so when they come up the stairs, I can hit them, and then I would get their machine gun if that's what they were doing.
Clearly would.
And then I'd go and get the other ones with that, and then everyone would go. Yeah.
What do you think you'd really
My
do?
Worry is that the police would see me with the machine gun and assume I was one of the terrorists. Take me out.
Death by cop.
Yeah. And then everyone go, oh, but no, he saved everyone. Yeah. He was good.
Complex fantasy.
Think that's what I imagine. So if that ever comes up, see what I actually do.
Well, I was on an airplane. I think my wife and I were on our way to honeymoon, I think, and it was a flight to Mauritius, and a man fell out of the toilet. Like, the door suddenly flew open and he just fell out, like he fainted or something. And we thought something was going to happen. We were like, this is it! But nothing happened. But all I did was sit up slightly and feel like I was going to do a poo. That was it. No bravery at all.
Yeah. No, I think I'd be the same. I'm sure I would be very unbrave. It's nice in my imagination. A man fell on me when I was on the plane to Armenia. So I talked about it in the last podcast, though. So spool back to that if you want to hear my story. Is there anything about the TV series Space that you have never said before? If so, say it now.
Probably not, to be honest. Other than that, there will never be any more, despite we constantly get asked about it. I'm sorry, but there just won't.
I did not ask that question.
I know.
I did not want you answering that question.
And the reason not, because it just didn't happen when it should have happened. There was a window when we could have done it, and it just didn't happen. And then because of what happened with Shaun of the Dead, it took us off in a different direction and coming back to Space. And I'm sad about that, because I think we had another series in us. It wasn't a two-series show. It was like there was another series, and there was Tim and Daisy, the two main characters, would have eventually, there would have been a huge romantic coming together for those two, and it would have ended cheesy and happy, and you know, that was all to come, but it never did. But there we go.
Maybe in an episode of Square Peg in a Round Hole. Go into the sewer underneath that house.
That's it.
Yeah.
This is the way to solve all my problems.
I mean, you're unlikely to come back and do a UK sitcom, aren't you? At any point in your life now?
I don't know. I mean, never say never. I mean, the thing is with TV now is that TV's changing. TV's almost won the war with film in a way, because it's, you know, theatrical cinema is on the ropes, really, and it's doing everything it can to not be, you know, 3D and fucking IMAX and capes and spaceships and stuff. But the fact is that with our homes becoming like cinemas, we can have TVs that look like cinema screens. People are getting more inclined to stay in and not go out. It's a shame, because you lose the communal experience. The whole point of films in the cinema isn't really seeing them on a big screen. It's seeing them together with people you don't know and, you know, sharing something. That's quite beautiful. But that's kind of, I hope it doesn't die, but it's dying.
But what's interesting, and I do think your films, are the blockbusters you're in, are different to this, but there's it's becoming too cliched and too obvious and you're not getting anything. And then something like Breaking Bad is an amazing, deep thing that you can engage with the characters. And,
And it goes on for hours and hours. Yeah.
So that TV actually offers more scope as a writer, as an actor, and as a viewer, I think.
It's becoming the place where a lot of serious acting is happening. And I just did a pilot in the US for a show called Mob City, which is like a sort of it's all set in the Mickey Cohen era of like 47 in LA, when the LAPD was struggling with there was all this immorality and amorality going on. And it's directed by Frank Darabont, who did The Shawshank Redemption, and it's got some amazing people in it, and it's a very attractive place for actors to go now. And I feel like it's no longer film's sort of poorer cousin. But, I don't know. The hardest thing about my job is I have to be away so much.
Yeah.
We worked it out the other day. We sat down and worked it out. This year, I did 127,903 air miles. And that's not... I don't mean on my card. I mean, that was the physical amount of time. Yeah. 5 continents and 10 countries and 26 cities. And that's between 2 films and 2 press tours. And that all sounds very fun and kind of like, isn't that cool? But I didn't see my daughter for three, four weeks. And it fucking hurts. You know, you're away for... It's very, very difficult. And it hits you like an ice headache every now and again. You just go, oh, God, I don't like this. And I was trying to figure out a way to have my cake and eat it and do the job which I love and I can do to a certain degree, but not have to ever leave home. And I don't know what the answer for that is, you know?
No, but I guess it gets... You know, you've got so much power. You're doing things that presume you're getting paid quite well for. I'm guessing you don't. No. I just get free Star Trek figures.
I get to keep my uniform. That's it.
But I think that is the danger. I mean, I work a lot too hard, but I don't have any children, so it's fine because they're excrement. But I think sometimes you have to step back and maybe go, well. It's really hard because, I think as an actor it's really hard because you're aware that it can just go, can't it?
Yeah. So. And the difficulty is that you get the chance to work with people that, I could stay, I could perhaps stay at home and try and get something going here and earn money and live. Yeah. But then the chance to work with certain people that you really want to work with is very difficult to, it's a battle between your own ambition and kind of whatever and your personal life is a strange, and I'm not complaining in any way because I'm having a lot of fun, but it is a weird one. It's a weird little dilemma,
And so if they offer you a part in Star Wars, the new lot they're making, what do you do? You go,
fuck yeah, shooting in London. It's shooting in Pinewood.
Oh, cool.
In fact, the great thing is at the moment is a lot of films are shooting here in the UK because we're offering very good tax breaks for film companies. So, the new Avengers is shooting here, Star Wars is shooting here, Mission Impossible is going to shoot here, Star Trek 3 is going to shoot here, I think, possibly. So that's kind of worked out quite nicely. So I don't have.
Well, if you do square peg in a round hole, we can just dig the round hole in your garden. Where the tree was.
Yes. Problem solved.
Just come in. Look, it's been fantastic. I haven't seen you for ages. It's been really lovely to see you again.
Too.
And thanks so much for coming on and doing this.
Thank you.
Trying to get you on for a little while, and it's great to have you, ladies and gentlemen. Simon Pegg, ladies and gentlemen. How'd you like them sky potatoes?
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight. and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
On Formative, middle school kids from New York City public schools interview a phenomenal collection of grown-ups.
Me, like, I don't know what I want to do.
You don't have to have all the answers.
I feel like a lot of people's favorite topics are, like, interest in their life.
That is a really good answer.
The podcast where the leaders of today are interviewed by leaders of tomorrow. Listen now at newyorkedge.org/formative or wherever you get your podcasts.
Thanks for listening. Go to gofasterstripe.com for all your Rich Herring download and book needs. Go to richherring.com/gigs to find out if Can I Have My Ball Back is coming near to you. And please listen to as many podcasts on this feed as you possibly can and make your family and friends and children and strangers, make them listen too. Do get consent from everyone before you make them listen, though. All right, thanks for listening. Go and listen to another one. Bye-bye.